We'll move to our last case of this morning, the NECA IBEW Local Union Health and Welfare Fund against ANA Drug Save RX. Yes. Mr. Mielke.
Bill, good morning to the panel. Craig Mielke on behalf of the plaintiff appellant. I'd like to start by describing and explaining exactly who my client is and who the plaintiff is, because I think there's been confusion both by SaveRx, their counsel, and the district court as to who the plaintiff in this case is. NECA is the National Electrical Contractors Association. That's the management component. IBEW Rockford Local 364 is the local union for Illinois Brotherhood of Electrical Workers with the jurisdiction in the Rockford area. But the client here, the party, is the Health and Welfare Fund. That exists by virtue of the Taft-Hartley Act, and by statute has to be a 50-50 group of trustees. Half of them are management. Half of them are the trustees for the local union. I don't represent the union. I certainly don't represent IBEW International. I represent this fund, which is a very distinct entity.
Does IBEW, this is probably just informational, the NECA, is that part as well up at the national level as it is with yours?
It's my understanding that NECA is both a national and local organization. The collective bargaining agreements in these type of situations are done not by individual employers, not individual electrical contractors, which are often relatively small entities, but rather on a jurisdictional geographic basis through NECA.
Area-wide.
So a collective bargaining agreement would be between a NECA local, if you will, and the local IBEW union.
But focusing on the fund, I mean, I certainly understand that it's the fund we're talking about. We have a lengthy period of time in which the fund is administering prescription drug benefits with SaveRx according to this national agreement, the amounts paid, the services rendered. And so the district court's opinion, as I read it in a nutshell, is we can see a couple of different documents that this might be, but course of conduct, dealing, acceptance by behavior tells us what is the agreement between the fund and SaveRx, or certainly some agreement, because otherwise nobody would be paying all these amounts of money. And it's this national agreement, and if it is this national agreement, there's an arbitration clause in it.
Sure. But let me kind of break up the timeline in two parts, the before and after, if you will, the IBEW national agreement. The before starts with SaveRx coming out to Rockford, Illinois to make a presentation to the fund, to the trustees, at one of their meetings. And then a few weeks later, the fund, by a vote of the trustees, approves SaveRx to be their pharmacy benefit manager. Either before or shortly after that approval, the so-called original agreement is given to the trustees.
But you say is given to the trustees, but your opponents assert that there isn't actually ever a signature.
Oh, we agree. It was never signed. Okay. No party ever signed the so-called original agreement.
And the rates that you're getting under this national document arrangement are less than any rates that are referred
Correct.
To in the so-called original agreement or anything presented to the fund.
Both of the agreements, all the agreements, reference exhibits that have a schedule of prices, if you will.
Right, and the prices that you get are lower than the prices of any schedule with the original agreement, right?
It's different than what's referenced in the original agreement, yes. The numbers are as referenced in the IBEW or national agreement after April of 2003.
It's not just the numbers. There are other things like these audits and retrospective payment back to February 1st, as I recall.
Back to April 1st, I think it was.
Sorry, but whatever. You know, the retrospective payment where there's this little letter we have, you know, we have good news for you, you know, you're
yep.
going to get...
I think the panel has the facts.
Yeah.
I think the question is then how do those facts fit into the case law? And the facts of this case are unique. And that's why I wanted to, if we go to, you know, say March of 2003, at that point in time, SaveRx is performing. They started performance in January. The only agreement that anybody would admit is in effect at that time is the so-called unsigned original agreement, which does not contain an arbitration clause. At that point, the facts fit squarely into the case law that everybody is citing here for the most part, where two parties and only two parties commence agreement with an existing but admittedly unsigned written agreement. Under those circumstances, everybody agrees. If that written agreement has an arbitration clause, the parties are bound by it. Here's where it gets kind of strange and gets very unique. What the heck is IBEW International doing making an agreement with SaveRx? They don't have the ability to do that. I mean, this is a Taft-Hartley plan where management has 50% of the control of the plan, and the international union is off there making agreements with a pharmacy benefit manager?
Well, the only thing they do is they negotiate at the national level, and this is where these association agreements nobody also signs. I mean, this whole thing is filled with
the so-called participation agreements, yeah, participation with, again, nobody signs.
I'm sorry. So,
but I think this is where.
So there's a new written agreement, and it's available for funds to use.
A new written agreement between a party that doesn't have the ability to contract.
It's a piece of paper that the funds can use with the SaveRx people.
And what is that piece of paper? I would suggest it's marketing efforts, and nothing more than marketing efforts, by SaveRx. SaveRx presents itself as being the friend of the unions, and most of their clients are health and welfare funds. SaveRx doesn't like Walmart. The unions don't like Walmart. So they present themselves as being friendly to organized labor in that regard.
SaveRx, I'm looking at I know there's all this other stuff in the record, but Appendix 1 in the Appellee's brief, that's the April 25th letter.
Correct.
It's sent to Mr. Eschen and Mr. Perez.
Correct, who's the president of the union and the BA for the union.
Right. So they're talking about this plan.
Right.
And it's clear, looking at the plan, that it's got to eventually find the funds. I mean, there are funds like yours all over the country. We know that they're Taft-Hartley, ERISA, they are what they are.
The reality is PBMs are a very competitive industry. What we're talking about on the pricing, and this gets a little maybe complicated, hopefully not too much off the point. The pricing by PBMs is done as a discount off of AWP, which is average wholesale price. Mm-hmm. At any point in time in the world, there's what purports to be, and there's litigation on this elsewhere, whether average wholesale price truly is the average wholesale price. But the way PBMs operate,
some of it, as a matter of fact,
is to give a discount off of that average wholesale price, the AWP. And the reality is, if Caremark is dropping their increasing their discounts in AWP because they're one of the industry leaders,
right,
everybody else has to follow along. So if the IBEW agreement, the international agreement, never existed, SaveRx is not going to sit there and hold the line on prices year after year. They'd be losing all their business. They're reducing their business. They're reducing or really increasing their discounts to meet the competition. Can my client be bound by marketing efforts of SaveRx because they're meeting the competition? I mean, we have to look at the case law because I think that's what we're bound by here. The facts are very interesting. They're very unique. But the case that was cited by the district court.
No, I think you're getting far afield, though. The question is there a written agreement to which somehow or another the fund and SaveRx are both parties that contains an arbitration clause? Because if there is, then whatever problems your client thinks exist in that relationship have to be put before the arbitrator in the District of Columbia under the AAA rules. It's not like a decision here one way or the other would say everything is wonderful. The only decision is which tribunal is going to hear this. Is it going to be the district court in Rockford, or is it going to be a panel of arbitrators? And that depends on whether there's a written agreement that binds both sides to arbitrate. That's really all there is to it.
I agree, Your Honor, and there's not a case out there that's really similar to the facts where a third party that doesn't have the ability to contract enters into some agreement.
It's not the third party who performed. It's the fund who performed. And you're trying to say, which I understand and will obviously listen to, that the fund wasn't doing anything that it wouldn't otherwise have done.
But SaveRx wouldn't have done anything. Right. Yeah. Thank you. And I'm reserving, I think, 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Well, you've reserved a minute at this point.
Okay, whatever. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Mr. Poore.
May it please the Court. I'd first like to respond to this idea that there was some confusion about who was contracting here. This whole issue about Taft-Hartley and there being confusion about who's the contracting party, that's never mentioned in their opening brief. We didn't have a chance to respond to that. This all comes up in the reply brief. So I'd say at the outset that issue was waived. But there's three basic facts that are undeniable. That the chairman of the fund, Thomas Eshin, at the outset of the national plan in April 2003, knew that the national plan would provide lower prices.
So you conceptualize this national plan as something that IBEW created for the use of various affiliated funds around the country?
Exactly, Your Honor. And it so states at paragraph 2.02 that it applies to locals, and it also applies to these health and welfare plans. They're expressly referred to as sponsors.
What's your structural relationship to the local unions vis-a-vis the national unions? I mean,
The IBEW is the international,
right,
as I understand it, and there is a local union, and the local union has a health and welfare fund, and that's the plaintiff here,
right,
and that's the entity that receives all these benefits. Mr. Eshin was there. He heard the lower prices were available. Quite naturally, he wanted lower prices for the fund. And
so you're representing, though, A&A Drug Company, which does business as SaveRx?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And this other entity dropped out somehow?
That's right. They incorrectly named another entity that had a similar name, and in their third amended complaint, they dropped that entity.
Well, I guess you're not the one to answer that. I should have answered your opposing counsel about the structure.
But that's how I understand it. And I think the main point is the entity that gets the benefits here is the fund. And Mr. Eshin then goes and asks SaveRx, based upon the idea that there's going to
be... The international took this plan that you gave them.
Or we negotiated it together.
Or whatever, however
yeah,
it
yeah,
came
it
about.
Was, right.
And it's available to any local in the country, then?
Correct. Any
local fund in the country.
Any
right,
fund,
not
any
fund,
fund in the country could avail themselves of this. And,
so then the question is, what's the evidence that there's actually agreement? You have a piece of paper, which may be good enough for the Federal Arbitration Act, but we also have the fundamental question. The Supreme Court has stressed over and over again that arbitration is a creature of agreement. We don't force people to arbitrate if they haven't agreed to arbitrate. So what we need here is solid evidence that the fund and SaveRx actually have an agreement between themselves to arbitrate this dispute that's arisen.
And there's three basic facts that satisfy that. One, Mr. Eshin said, I'd like a copy of the contract. I'd like the fund to have lower prices retroactive. SaveRx sent him a copy of the contract.
Is that the April 25th, 2003 letter?
Correct.
That's the response to Eshin's request?
That's correct, Your Honor. They sent him a copy of it, and they also said, good news, you're going to get the lower rates retroactive to April 1st, 2003 under the terms of this national plan. And then for the next 8 years, the fund receives the lower prices under the national plan, and those lower prices total some $2.6 million. That's undisputed fact number one.
The amount by which they're lower, or that's the amount of money?
That's the amount by which they are lower than they would have received under the original contract.
Okay.
Undisputed fact number two, in addition to the lower prices, the fund, not any other entity, the fund receives another $1 million in rebates over the next 8 years that it could never have received under the original contract. The original contract says, paragraph 5.5, that only SaveRx gets refunds. They could never have gotten these rebates, I mean. So that's unique to the national plan. And then number three, time and time again, the fund is told by the IBEW, by these annual audits, and by their own benefit administrators that the agreement that they're operating under is part of a, quote, coalition plan. That's very plain. And the fund never objects over all these years to this statement. So based on all of that, when we have this 8 years of continuing conduct, when they are receiving somewhere in the neighborhood of $3.6 million in benefits, when they've been told over and over again that they are participating in a coalition plan, then under basic principles of assumption or estoppel, they're bound by the terms of that national plan, including the arbitration agreement, even
so
if it's unsigned.
You're right. It's a little stunning to me that these arrangements, which involve a lot of money, if that's the savings, are done so seat of the pants. I mean, wouldn't it be in SaveRx's interest to get like actual signed contracts from people?
I've thought of that. When I look at and I've read all these unsigned arbitration cases, I've said, you know, I'm sure everybody in hindsight says, yes, they should have gotten a, it would have been better if somebody had signed it.
And be here, for one thing, much as we like to have you, but, you know, it's.
But, yes, I mean, in the ideal world, if it was signed, we wouldn't be here. But that's why we have all these.
Are you taking, now there are funds like the one in Rockford. Are there funds then around the country that have similar, that's using your national plan?
Correct, Your Honor. And there's quite a number of other funds across the country that are using the SaveRx
plan. But I assume there are some that are not using it.
That's, oh, yeah, it's a competitive business, and we're.
I mean, using your SaveRx or whatever.
Yeah, SaveRx.
Some might be Caremark, and some might be somebody else.
Right.
Somebody X. But it's, yes, there's quite a number, and that's why the prices were lower, because this
but
was
a
national.
If you went to the national, say, hey, we got a good deal, does it give you any more leverage selling it to the locals?
Well, that was the whole idea behind this in April 2003, that rather than do this one-off, that they would aggregate these under one umbrella and have a national plan and have the economies of scale provide real discounts and real savings. And they are very substantial savings, as we've seen. In this case, it's $2.6 million. So coming back to the fundamental here, under basic principles of estoppel or assumption, when they've accepted these benefits for 8 years, when they were told that they were a participant, they're bound. And they're bound not only, they're bound for the entire contract, including the arbitration provision, whether it's signed or not. And as all these cases hold, conduct, what people actually do, can bind someone to a contract just as well as ink on a paper. And for that reason, the district court correctly determined that the fund, in this case, was bound by the contract. We ask that the district court's opinion be affirmed.
Okay, thank you.
Unless there are any further questions?
Mr. Mielke, anything further?
I'm trying to sneak something into the reply brief. Their brief, for the first time, characterizes the IBW International as the parent of the local fund. They've never told us that before. That's blatantly untrue. They also assert in their brief that the IBW International selected SaveRx to provide a plan for its entire membership. That's legally impossible. So it's SaveRx that brought up these issues that required us to explain what really this fund is. Let me just say it. We've got, I think it's four NECA trustees who are very disturbed that a union president and a union BA selected what we believe to be thieves to manage their pharmacy benefit plan. They say they saved us a couple of millions. We think they stole a lot more than they saved us. I think you have to look at the case law, and we have both Illinois and federal case law. And one is the Mount Sinai case, which admittedly is not on point. There's no case right on point here. But in the Mount Sinai case, a collective bargaining agreement agreed to between labor and management was not binding on the fund because the trustees, even though they're made up of labor and management, they're wearing different hats. So the president of this local union wearing the president hat, or the business agent wearing the BA hat, he's not wearing the trustee hat. There's no proof in this case that the trustees themselves, and certainly not the NECA trustees, were aware of this arbitration clause. We also have what I call the participation agreement quandary. The national agreement has a condition precedent, which is the local fund has to sign off on the participation agreement. That never happened. SaberX never even requested it. So SaberX can't claim the benefit of the arbitration clause in this agreement and yet avoid the condition precedent for that agreement to take effect. And again, there's case law on basic contract law that if the written agreement has a condition precedent which is not satisfied, then nobody's bound.
I think we have the point.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We will take the case under advisement, and we will be in recess.